This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Yep.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Ian Quinn from Two Terraces in Hawke's Bay. How are you, mate?
Good, thanks.
Excellent, excellent. What we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about Chardonnay clones. We found out last week that you've planted about half your vineyard in Chardonnay, but I've noticed there's five different clones. I think there's five different clones.
Yeah, that's right.
And what I want to do is I just want to talk about what the different clones you're running are,
yep.
Why you're running such a range of clones, and also what you think they give to the wine. So let's start off with why plant in 10 hectares five different clones?
So we've always sort of wanted to give our winemakers options to kind of build complexity in their wines. So we've always wanted it more than a single selection of any particular variety. In the case of Chardonnay, you know, half the vineyard is Chardonnay, as you've said, and so it just sort of made sense to carry on exploring that those different selections.
And is it each block is a block of a clone?
Yeah, that's right. Everything's a particular clone or selection. We're not intermingling them or anything like that in the vineyard anyway.
Do you want to tell us what the clones are? We'll come and talk about each clone individually in a minute, but yep. Do you want to just give us an overview of the different clones?
We have clone 548 and clone 95, which are both Burgundy selections. We have Mendoza and 1066. 1066 is another Burgundy originated clone. And then we have a selection called, we call Calera. I think it's FPS 107. That's out of California originally. Josh Jensen selected that. The origins of that are sort of a little bit murky, lost in time. Came from France, not exactly which vineyard. There's a couple of rumours around it being De Jac or DRC, but I don't think anyone really knows now.
All right, so is there a particular reason you chose those clones? Because how many clones are available in New Zealand?
Yeah, quite a large number. Some of the older clones are more maybe suited to sparkling or volume production. The first one we selected was 548, which was relatively new to New Zealand at the time. It's a really nice spectrum of fruit flavours from citrus, yellow fruit like nectarines, potentially into peach at times, although not so much inland where we are. And yeah, just a bunch structure makes it reasonably resilient as Chardonnay goes.
Loose structure.
Yeah, but looser.
I've been looking at Piwi wines and Piwi selections and all that type of thing. And when they're looking at it, you know, loose cluster is what you want really, isn't it?
Yeah, yep.
And that's from mold and mildews.
Yeah, and if you kind of contrast that with, say, clone 95, it's renowned for being larger bunches, tighter and more susceptible to rot once it's getting ripe. But we sort of went with that because it was, again, we want that diversity, and clone 95 sort of gives you a kind of a creamy textural element that we don't get from some of the other selections.
And where was 95 developed? If it's tight bunches, then you'd think it'd be developed somewhere dry.
I think it definitely came out of Burgundy, but it was probably one of the earlier selections. So as people evolved and started looking for looser bunch architectures, different flavours, then things like 548 came along.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because when I've been looking at sort of the history of clonal selections, you know, you went from, let's say, 1920s onwards, and 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, it was all about volume, wasn't it? It was just like, how much booze can we make out of this product? And then there was a shift to quality or perceptions of flavour and quality. And now, in the last 10, 20 years, it's been a lot about, because there's a lot of pressure about reducing chemicals in the vineyard, to finding looser bunches, thicker skins, disease tolerant.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's really been the factor that's driven, or one of the key factors that's driven 548 is a newer clone in New Zealand. There are a couple of other clones. There's a Muscat clone which came out about the same time. We don't have that
Is it a Muscat or is it a Chardonnay?
It's a Chardonnay, but the flavours and aromas are closer to Muscat than you would normally see from, normally expect with Chardonnay. Then we also have Mendoza, which is like a real winemaker favourite in New Zealand. Those bunches tend to be, a bit looser, but what characterises that is sort of the hen and chicken nature of the berries. So you get these really small, we call them chickens, but really small berries some years, and they get riper and real intense fruit alongside the larger berries that give it some volume. At some point it was driven by virus.
That caused the hen and chicken?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, because I always thought hen and chicken was caused by poor fruit set. So normally when you get poor fruit set, usually what happens is the grapes will fall off, but sometimes they'll stay on, and that's when you get your hen and chicken, because there's no DNA in there, so the plant doesn't invest anything in trying to make them big, because what's the point in attracting birds to a piece of fruit that doesn't do it any good?
Yeah, definitely linked to flowering and the weather around flowering. Mm-hmm. So last spring we had really hot, windy weather, really good flowering. And if you look in the Mendoza, there's patches where you get a bit of chicken, but it's predominantly large berries, good fruit. But on a cooler year, yeah, you get a lot more chickens and, like you say, a lot more shatter and berries dropping off. As a selection, it's a bit less dependable, which is not fantastic from a grower point of view, but the just the intensity of flavour you get out is, makes it sought after by winemakers.
Is that because the lots of skin to juice ratio? On a small berry, you're lots of skin to juice, or?
Yeah, possibly, and also the smaller berries tend to be super ripe, so you get that broader spectrum of flavours.
Yeah, all right. So they get further along the physiological ripeness?
So the smaller berries will have a sort of a higher Brix or higher concentration of sugar, mm-hmm. And the flavours are going to move more into the kind of riper stone fruit, while the other berries sort of bring some citrus, grapefruit, maybe nectarine in behind that. Okay. So you get a more complex, a wider flavour spectrum.
Kirsten in Matafero up in Gisborne's got quite a lot of Mendoza, and she seemed to think that it brings a savouriness to the wines as well. Because the wines didn't taste oaky, but there was a character to them that you'd go, oh, something's in there, something's in there. Do you see that, or are you aware of that?
I guess one of the things that people have picked from here is, like, we're quite citrus-driven, grapefruit, yellow fruit, because we're inland and we get that freshness. The other thing people are picking is sort of some of the kind of cooking herbs, giving a bit of a savouriness, I guess, to that central fruit.
Okay, so you describe it as cooking herbs. Okay.
Our Chardonnay goes to sort of four winemakers: Tony Bush, Kate Radburn, Radburn Cellars, Smith & Sheth with Steve Smith, and Balancia with Warren and Lorraine. And I guess Tony's descriptor around that cooking herbs is sort of a medley or bokeh garni of tarragon, rosemary, thyme and marjoram. Yeah, it's an interesting characteristic. Originally we planted rosemary at the end of all our rows. We have mm-hmm. steel posts and wires, and that sort of provided a bit more biodiversity and made it easier to avoid the wires when you're driving around in the tractor.
I love that. People often plant roses at the end and they come up with some story about early indicators. Nah, mate, it makes it easy getting the tractor around.
Yeah. So that kind of, that site characteristic, that bokeh garni, started coming through. And initially we thought it was, back in those days, a lot of the fruit was being machine harvested. It's almost all hand-picked now. But we thought the machine harvesters were picking up rosemary and carrying that character through to the wine. So we actually pulled a lot of that out. And then a couple of years later, realised, actually, no, that flavour still persists. On New Year's, we opened four of those different winemakers' wines together and just had a glass of each one. And you could sort of see a combination of those yellow fruits, citrus, and also the winemaking, the stylistic approach of each winemaker. But as we kind of left those bottles for another couple of days, the vineyard influence really started to shine through. You could still pick which winemaker was making each glass or each bottle, but that kind of common cooking herb theme sort of really came through nice and strong.
Okay, so we've talked about 548 and 95, I think, and the Mendoza, but you've got a couple of other clones in there, haven't you?
Yeah, we planted a little bit of 1066.
What is that? Is that named after the Battle of Hastings? Because here we are in Hastings. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
I think the French have obviously been doing a lot of work in selections, and it just happens to be the 1066 selection.
Yeah, but I know, it's just funny, isn't it? 1066, French clone in Hastings.
It kind of rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it has a lot of those small berries. People talked about it as a modern-day Mendoza, but really the yields that you get from it are uneconomic for a grower, possibly for most wineries as well. So some really nice, intense flavour, but just extremely low yielding.
Yep. Okay, so will you pull that out and put something else in, or...?
We just planted it as a trial. Someone actually cautioned us about it, but we were keen to see what it was like, and it turned out it was like everyone said it would be. But sometimes you've got to try these things for yourself. So we have... Yeah.
Although my favourite quote at the moment is, if you're clever, you'll learn from your own mistakes. Really clever people learn from other people's mistakes.
Yep. So we have about 80 plants just outside the house, which Linda picks each year, and we just add that into someone's pick.
Yep. Okay, so they get a mass selection.
Yeah.
And what's the other clone that you've got in there?
The other clone, the Calera, I think it's FPS 107, that's come out of California, and it's really distinctive. It is later ripening, probably even 10 days later, and that really holds its acidity. So I think there's a few people around that are interested, either from interested if they're making Chardonnay and they want quite a high acidity, either making it naturally or just that's stylistically what they're after, and maybe also for sparkling for that reason. But it'll be interesting to see as seasons change and if we get more climate change influence, whether that acidity might be a real asset.
Yeah. Is the flavour profile similar? Everything else is the same? And the bunch, is it loose or is it...
The bunches are actually huge and somewhat tight, but the skins are a bit thicker than, say, 95. So it's a little bit more resilient, and that high acidity also is good for keeping them healthy.
Yeah, it makes sense, though, to think about where it's coming from California, and that warm, exactly. Dry... They don't care about molds and mildew as much, but they care about acidity. So, and also volume. Bigger grapes give you more tonnage, really.
Yeah, and I think that shows through in the later ripening as well, that it's come from a really hot climate in recent years. That follows through into our vineyard as well.
What's your favourite Chardonnay?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
What's your favourite Chardonnay to grow? And we'll ask you, what's your favourite to drink?
Probably, I think 548's kind of the best of all worlds.
That's a new French clone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of got the spectrum of flavour and it's looser bunches. I think Mendoza, if you look at, just the complexity factor, but 548 really chases Mendoza pretty hard in terms of the wine that you can produce.
And 548's the easiest to grow as well? Or?
Yeah, it's probably easier than Mendoza and a bit more consistent in terms of yield.
Yep.
But less susceptible to what's happening during flowering.
Yeah, okay. And just out of curiosity, you've got half your vineyard is in Chardonnay. What is the Chardonnay wines that from the rest of the world, not Hawke's Bay, for the rest of the world that you think, not necessarily what you're trying to emulate here or anything like that, but just a style of Chardonnay you think you really like?
Linda and I, we have really different tastes in wine. It's pretty common that we're drinking different wine at night. So to speak for Linda, because she's not mic'd up, she enjoys a lot more kind of fruit-driven wine. To be fair, in recent years, now that she's drinking better Chardonnay, and from some winemakers that really know what they're doing with oak, she's really into sort of a bit of oak influence alongside that fruit.
Yeah,
I really like texture. So we've got people doing fermentation in concrete eggs or concrete tulips. And I think that kind of creamy textural side to things, maybe with whether it's through those vessels or through lees stirring. I really like that.
I've looked at those eggs. I've never really got a big study on them, but my understanding, and I don't really pretend to know, is that because of the way they're shaped, you get circulating currents within the egg, within it, and that creates, I suppose, if you've got lees or anything like that, it creates almost like continuous batonnage.
Keeps more of the lees in suspension and in contact with the wine. Tony Bush is one of our winemakers, so he has things like heartwood, which are really orientated around barrel fermentation. Has Golden Egg, which is based on that principle of fermenting in a large concrete egg, keeping those lees in suspension and in contact. He's just brought out egg number 3 is the name of the wine, but there's like half a dozen eggs there, and there was one that was just standout. Something about the kinetics in that particular egg were different to the others. Yeah, so that's kind of quite a special wine that we're enjoying at the moment.
What is it, egg number 3?
Egg number 3, that's egg what it's called.
Nice, I like
it. Kind of like the number 8 wire mentality in New Zealand. Probably doesn't translate overseas.
No. I like mine poached, to be honest. Okay then, Ian, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time, mate.
Thanks a lot, and great to have you out in New Zealand again.
Cheers, mate.